But as for your abandoned and desolate places, and your land which has been destroyed, really? That was verse 19. Verse 23. Kings will be your nursing fathers, and their queens your nursing mothers. They will bow down to you with their faces to the earth and lick the dust of your feet. You will know that I am Jehovah, and that those who hope in me will not be ashamed. Isaiah chapter 49, verse 23, our daily scripture for today, little children. And that was from the Ward Green version of 2003. As we come off the just unbelievably unprecedented, almost, but the precedents for it are many, many years ago, the U.S. presidential election. Excuse me. The U.S. presidential election. The U.S. presidential election. Probably, I think it's the first time ever when a convicted felon has been elected president. And against those kinds of odds, I mean, it's just showing that the intelligence of the American people is somewhat greater than some of us might realize, that they can see through, the superficial attempts by some people to not only denigrate, but also to not just slander, but also to criminalize, right, the behavior of their opponent in a political race, without any compunction, meaning they have no ability to be critical of their own actions, right? They don't. Have discipline. So, clearly, although the election is not final yet, it looks like the victor is going to be the Republican leader, and kings will be your nursing fathers, it says in Isaiah. We know that probably Bobby Kennedy is going to be acting in that capacity of a nursing father, and we know that we're going to have some great support from Elon Musk in the Trump administration. But it's not really clear what's going to happen on the world stage. There's a great problem with the world. Sorry about the overly bright picture. With the world right now, with the situation, it's not clear what's going to happen. Not at all. I mean, we don't want to prejudge, but I think we saw a strong president during the former administration of President number 45. My throat's a little bit still affected by the allergies. And so, how are we doing? Oh, yeah, it looks pretty well adjusted for width. But, I mean, yeah, the world situation is not something that we, as Christians, concern ourselves with. Because it's too unsettled. It's just, I mean, it could break out into any kind of, you know, major conflict at any time, and so we don't pay a lot of attention to it because that's just going to increase the amount of stress in our lives. So beginning our reading of the Ark of Urartu again for today, the Orient Express, we have Angelina Jolie looking somewhat like an Oriental or Far Eastern person wearing the outfit that she's got there, her hair, her makeup. It looks as though she could even be from the Far East, as we see her there in the photo from fairly, probably pretty early in her career. I'm not sure if that picture's still there, actually, but anyway. On the webpage where it was found originally by me. But the second pot of tea, I say, in chapter 6, paragraph 5 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, tastes much better salting it right. I always put salt in my tea, even now when I have matcha tea. Lattes, it needs salt. If you don't put any salt in your tea, it just tastes bland, or, you know, it lacks character, so I always put salt. I want to write quickly because I have some more beauties. The similarity of the name Ara to Arioch, the king of Elasar, Genesis 14:1. Yeah, we made that comparison before. Sir Walter Raleigh wrote about the identity of this Armenian with the king called Arioch in Genesis 14:1 in the Bible. And that was striking me by this morning when I wrote this paragraph, 6:5. You see, Abraham lived in the times of Arioch, according to that inspired scripture, Genesis 14:1. And I think we better look at it, otherwise we're not very convincing. But this was in the part of the book of Genesis that talks about Abraham in verse 13 and 12 and so on, in the chapters leading up to this one. And then we've got the mention of Arioch, king of Elasar, alongside the name of Chedorlaomer, the king of Elam, whom we identified as Gudea, who did in fact conquer Elam. So this Arioch, as Chedorlaomer, could be Gudea, and Gudea lived close to the city of Larsa. So Arioch, king of Elasar, that's interesting. Could be related to this king of Larsa. But Larsa was quite close to the place, Lagash, where Gudea lived, and which is reflected in the name Chedorlaomer. In the Laomer part of the name, it reflects the name of the place, Lagash. Now, I don't know. Now, I forget. There's a lot to study on every one of these individual names, but Arioch, king of Elasar. Now, Ara, did Sir Walter Raleigh, I've forgotten whether Sir Walter Raleigh mentioned Ara. Yeah, I think it was the Armenian that he was mentioning. So, in that case, Elasar might not be the city of Larsa. That just happened to be a city nearby to the place where Gudea resided. Very near, in the same part of Mesopotamia. But Ara was said to be the best friends with Ninus, whom we call Chedorlaomer or Gudea. I made a recording last night, I write, which I want to show to you. It's nothing more than the Hurrian Ark, which is my composition on piano. First, I need to check the fire again momentarily. Anyhow, and then I write, I'm back, and adding a link for the Ara-Ninus connection. Where's the link? History of Armenia. Wow. There is a link to that, apparently. Here we have the original book on the right, which is a photographic reproduction. Then we have the textual transcription, the transcription of it. His son Ara, right. Here it mentions Ara ascended the throne of Armenia after the death of his father, or the late monarch. He was surnamed the Handsome, and he was the one mourned by Semiramis, as we saw in the painting that we looked at just recently. Ara was surnamed the Handsome from the extreme beauty of his person. Ninus, who had entered into such an intimate league with Aram, so he was in league with Aram, continued to distinguish his son, Ara, with marks of regard, no way inferior to those which he had shewn his father. Modern English would say shown his father. Ara considerably improved the kingdom, and about Armavir, the capital, etc. So this was, open this image in a new tab. There it is. That's the photographic reproduction of that page. Just says the same words as we just read, but that were transcribed by the Wikisource. Content. The Wikisource content is, it contains the entire book, apparently, The History of Armenia by Avdol. A translation by Avdol. That is. Who wrote it? I'm trying to remember who wrote it. How do we go back? To page one, if we want. It's not easy. I thought I was burned out, but I'm definitely burned in. If I'm not burned out, that's for sure. So I was so sleep deprived, I thought I have to get sleep. But then I just, you know, I did like I used to do years ago. I'd take 3 minutes or whatever it takes, where I close my eyes and meditate, and I just recover sufficiently that I don't feel like I desperately I'm about to collapse in sleep, which is what I felt before I did that little brief meditation. I now am going to get that audio mixed and bring it there. Because it was so late last night, I haven't mixed it yet. I'm reading this paragraph, continuing to read it. For this is 6.5 of the article, The Ark of Urartu. For those of you so inclined, it was the raw fourth take. I should also mention that the drums were a step-recorded all-acoustic snare sampled track recorded a few days ago. So I sampled it from my snare. Sounds like. Is that true? Not necessarily. I could have taken it from one of the samples that was already in my keyboard, but I have the technology. The technology is in the keyboard to do that. I can record instruments and then use them as full-blown instruments with all the different notes on the keyboard, playing that same sound at all the different pitch or frequency levels, right? All the different frequencies that a piano has. I can play whichever the starting pitch is at, all the other pitches on the piano, all the other keys will be either higher or lower if that one is somewhere in the middle that you sample. And I haven't used that feature much, but I just know that if I start using any of my studio equipment, once I go in the studio, I'll never come out. So that's one of the reasons why I don't go in the studio, because I know I'll never come out. Because it's just mesmerizing, and completely endless, the things you can do. Completely, infinite. Hey, I'm not proud of it. Pride before a crash. Proverbs 16 and 18. What a great scripture that is. Let's read that one. Proverbs 16 and 18. 16 and 18. Pride is before a crash, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. Yeah, whenever we think we know something also. Paul wrote, we don't quite know it as we should. So 18:16 of Proverbs, is it? No, 16:18. 16:18 of Proverbs, pride is before a crash. Pride is before a crash, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. But also, let's just go there. Let me just take a guess at where I think this other one is. 1 Corinthians 8. Yes, it's 1 Corinthians 8 and 2. If anyone thinks he has acquired knowledge of something, he does not yet know it just as he ought to know it. That's another one that's similar to the pride is before a crash, right? If you think you know something, you suddenly say, maybe you say, oh, I know that. And then you find out, well, you didn't quite understand it fully. Or there's more to learn, or you were wrong, or whatever. But you don't quite know it as you ought to know it. If you think you've acquired knowledge, it's not possible to really know anything, is what that's saying, with any accuracy. Knowledge is limitless, right? There's no limit on what you can learn. So I'm not proud of my work. It's never a pride. It's only satisfaction and sometimes great joy and a lot of pleasure, but there's no pride. In the epic Enmerkar and the Lord of Errata, we see that the word Errata refers to Ararat. Yeah, right. Enmerkar and the Lord of Errata. So he wrote to the Lord of Errata, Enmerkar being the king of Sumeria, or, in other words, Nimrod, the king of Babylon, the king of that ancient period, which we identified as about 2700 BC, that was the time of Nimrod, just preceding the Egyptian kingdom, very close to the Egyptian, or at the beginning of the Egyptian kingdom, almost exactly, the Lord of Errata. That's something I'd completely forgot about, because we read about this epic, Enmerkar and the Lord of Errata, but how often do we think, well, Errata, that means Ararat. I wasn't thinking that. but it does. It refers to Ararat. And the interesting use of the word Lord appears to have direct correspondence to the name of Haik, which is the same as the word for cock. Right? The rooster cock. Like there was Khaki Perry. I think that was the throne name, in fact, of the Egyptian pharaoh, whom we identified as Joseph, but who was also known as Senchuet II, Sesostris II, Khaki Perry. And that name, Khak, Kok, or Haik, because the C sound is just like a brief. Haik. Haik is a word that begins with the letter H, but that could easily be a CH. It's just a breathing sound. Haik, an H, is a breathing sound. But a CH is just a rough breathing. Right? So it's CH and H are very similar, or K, or KH. So Khaki Perry is the same as Haik. And I remember a lot about that idea of Khaki Perry relating to the cock. I remember that a lot from when I wrote the articles that talked about Joseph having been the pharaoh, Senyasret II, in some other article. Hopefully we'll do that article, you know, whether soon, I don't know, but maybe soon. As previously discussed, you know, as I just said, with regard to the Egyptian kings, and of course, we know that the pharaoh who came after Senyasret II was Senyasret III, whom we identified as Ephraim, and he fits perfectly with the Egyptian Hercules, who was a very, very successful military Egyptian king, and then he was followed by Amenemhet III, whom we identified as Manasseh, and also as Minos, or Minos, the king of Crete. And we had the labyrinth. There was a labyrinth in Egypt, and also there was, I believe, another labyrinth on the island of Crete. But there was the idea of the Minotaur and the labyrinth is very common as a myth that we associate with the island of Crete, it seems to me, with King Minos, who was the king of Crete. So therefore, we've identified Joseph and his two sons in among the Egyptian kings. That was an incredible discovery, but it was so incredible that, you know, we didn't dwell on it. But I wish I had more opportunity to explain my beliefs on the principles of things generally. For example, on idolatry. One of my beliefs is how we strive for perfection. I'm just reading this. I don't even know what's coming next, although I've prepared it, but I forget what's coming. We strive for perfection, and it can be done in such a way as worshiping an image or an outward appearance instead of focusing on the underlying, right? Like the underlying, you know, principle, like love or whatever, that's underlying that image. Firebreak. I wanted to go stoke the fire at that point. It's really cold, I wrote, in this room. I'll be right back. Meanwhile, back at the farm, that's an English expression. It doesn't refer to a farm. It's just an expression about, you know, meanwhile, back at the place where we were formerly, a fair treatment of Armenians and their history would require a consideration of all the dates determined from books. But who said life was fair? And that's the end of chapter 6, paragraph 5. Good thing I checked. I was going to say 4, but it's paragraph 5. Chapter 6 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. And, of course, Urartu, is a word that comes from the name Ararat, because the vowels mean nothing. It's Arartu, not just Urartu, but Arartu or Araratu or Arata. I mean, you could, because Urartu, the only difference between Arata and Urartu in terms of the consonants is there's one more R in Urartu and one more T in Arata. Other than that, if you ignore the vowels and just look at the consonants, there's no difference between Arata and Urartu. They're very similar and rather unusual too. You wouldn't find many other names that are similar to that. It's quite unique. It's unique enough, let's say. It's different enough from all the other words that we see that it looks like it's got to be the same place. So, I don't know what this sounds like, the Hurrian Ark. I don't know what it is. I have no idea, but I didn't listen to this yet. I don't know what it's going to be like. Let's go back here. Where's the... It's got to load. It takes a while to download. Here it is. So that's the best I could do at jazz improvisation on the piano around that time when I wrote that article. And, you know, you don't usually get better at playing a piano, you know, when you don't practice. You don't usually get better, but you actually do get better over time, even if you don't practice. As long as your mind, the part of your mind that you use for improvisation is improving, you will still get better. You need to play and get back into it again in order to actually benefit from that improvement. But, I'm amazed sometimes how it just, you know, 10 years later, I'll come back to the piano after having been away for some years, maybe 10 years even, and then I'll start to play again, and I can play better than I could play before. Yeah, it's not me. It's just the fact of the way the brain is able to learn things. That's what it is. And it can progress even when you're not active all the time in that particular endeavor. So we're just about coming to our end here. But I really find that I hear what I was trying to do in those improvisational moments. I can hear what I had in my mind, that I can see what direction I was going sometimes in those musical improvs, but or jazz is what it really is, I guess you could say. But mine are always based on blues generally. Although no, that's not true. I do other kinds of, but I don't do sort of all types of jazz. I might do some other style, a few other styles that are not blues. And of course, I often do variations on blues. I do country. There's a country sort of chord sequence that's similar to blues that I use also, that I've used before. For example, for the song Tommy Was Here, that song. That was one of the first ones I did in that style, I think. But I did, that was an other multi-instrumental with, I did all the instruments and I also sang on that one. Can't remember if I played the drums live. Sometimes I played the drums live on my recordings, and never having been a drummer, I just bought a drum set and I was amazed what you can do on drums. I mean, I was fascinated with the potential of drums and how I bought all the microphones so I could record them and so on. It was a big expedition, you know, a big undertaking to start my own home studio, which I did back in those days. In fact, quite a long time before this, this article. That was in the 80s when I did that. But that's it for today's study, just about. Yeah, in the late 80s, in 87, I bought a 1-inch tape deck, you know. Whereas the big studios had 2-inch tape. I had 1-inch tape, 16-track. They had 2-inch tape, 24-track, or something like that. In the analog days of tape. Analog tape. But it was still pretty good quality, the Tascam that I had. This beautiful MS-16 machine. Still have it, actually, but it's just so obsolete now, I don't know if I can use it. The tape is expensive. It costs like $100 a reel for like 30 minutes or something of tape, I think it is. Anyway, that's November 6th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 20:05 hours North American Eastern Time. Look, this is Sissy. Look, it's a Rolex Day-Date imitation, but a larger version using the Miyota movement, the non-hacking version. This is a hacking movement, the Bauhaus watch, called Annie, and that's it for today's study. On my behalf, they say bye for now.